now to Simon and Garfunkel. These guys had had gone to high school together, and I didn't realize they had known each other way back then. I knew about Tom and Jerry, that they'd performed, and they had a hit, and then they disappeared again. Kind of fill us in on how they fit together.
Yeah, they had met in school in Forest Hills, New York, and immediately gravitated together for their musical interests, and they formed a little teenage group patterned after the Everly Brothers called Tom and Jerry. Very good, George. Remember that. And have a minor hit called Hey Schoolgirl. And in 1955, into 56. And it seemed like a promising start of a career, but it didn't. You know, they had a couple more records with Tom and Jerry, and it didn't do as well. And by the time they were finished with high school, they were like almost has-beens, which is kind of a funny thing to think
that's
about.
That's amazing, yeah.
It is. And they went their separate ways to college. Reconvened as Simon and Garfunkel using their actual names, which was funny. The head of the record company at the time was really worried about that because he thought it sounded like either a comedy act or a department store. And you know, that was not, you know, you didn't really use your names back then like that.
Or a Jewish law firm.
Or a Jewish law firm, and you know, people would come up to them at clubs and say, "Oh, your music's nice, but where are the jokes? You're a comedy duo, right?" And they put out a record called Wednesday Morning 3M, which was not successful, so they had another flop. And then by complete fluke, one of the songs on that record, Sound of Silence, is a remix. They add drums and electric guitar to kind of make it into a then-fashionable folk rock sound.
Without their knowledge.
Without their knowledge. Paul, at that point, they've broken up again. Paul is in London doing as a solo folk performer. Art is back in college. And suddenly they have a hit, and they're finally launched as Simon and Garfunkel. And by the early 1970, so they'd been a duo at that point, and they're reconvened, you know, status for 5-6 years. And, you know, they were starting to kind of get on each other's nerves a little bit and go in different directions. They'd always, you know, had an on-again, off-again relationship themselves between them. And by that point, you know, Art Garfunkel had just finished filming the movie Catch-22 in Mexico, which Paul wasn't crazy about because they were in the middle of doing what was to become the Bridge Over Troubled Water album. And as a result, Paul had to do a lot of that record himself, and Art would be in Mexico and flying back and forth to Los Angeles, Mexico. And that caused some friction in the band. And you know, what's interesting is that it became pretty clear when I was interviewing people who worked with them at the time that, you know, essentially they broke up making Bridge Over Troubled Water, which was, of course,
their masterpiece.
Their masterpiece and this instantly successful record and a great record, too. They just, at the time, didn't tell anybody. So they finished the record. It's released early in 1970, the song Bridge Over Troubled Water, which was not their first choice for a single from their record. They thought it should be Cecilia. But their head of their label, Clive Davis, listened to it and said, "No, no, you have to make it Bridge." And it's so interesting that they were taken aback by that, as Clive Davis told me. They were like, a 5-minute ballad? You know, that's not something that, you know, AM radio programmers are going to play. And Clive Davis said, no, they will. You know, this is a great song. It really stands out. And he was right. Becomes a huge hit right out of the gate. And what happens? Basically nothing. You know, Paul Simon signs up to teach a songwriting class at NYU. Art Garfunkel goes on an extended vacation in Europe. Very unusual at the time. You know, a band puts out a new record. They're usually, you know, doing interviews and going on tour and, you know, doing the whole promotion thing. Here, these guys put out this huge record, and they immediately kind of go their separate ways. And it was telling of what was going to come for the rest of the year.
You know, I look at, I get this, there's all kinds of lists of the best of, you know, a particular year. Top 100 hits of 1970, you look at the list, and Bridge Over Troubled Water, number one. It's pretty much number one in any list you look at. And then you got the Carpenters at number two. You got American Woman from the Guess Who, which, you know, rock. And then you got B.J. Thomas, Raindrops Fall on My Head at number four. War. And then Diana Ross. It just, that was a sort of a schizophrenic year. You've got, for example, we haven't talked about James Taylor yet, but his Fire and Rain, which is just a classic song, an all-time great song, is number 67 on this list. Bobby Sherman's Julie, Do You Love Me is number 29. It's hard to figure out. I guess this was an era when all kinds of genres were played on the same station. I can remember in high school, you'd have hard rock songs, heavy metal kind of songs, and Motown right. songs all on the same station, and now it's all divvied up. But this seems particularly schizophrenic.
And it sort of was, and it was almost in a way the beginning of the first sort of generation gap in the music, because on one hand you had all those original bands from, you know, the 60s, like the Beatles, and so people were talking about, still out there making records for, like, sort of the original boomer rock fans. And then, you know, yes, you had Bobby Sherman, you had the Partridge Family, forgot about them, I Think I Love You was that fall of 1970. That was for a whole different group. That was for, you know, for kind of like little kids in a way, you know, not the original Beatle fans. That was, so they had this second wave of fans who wanted their music, you know, that spoke to them. And then the Carpenters, also really fascinating, because what you had at the end of that, toward the end of the year, was really the start of what we now call, you know, soft rock, adult contemporary. You had them, you had Bread, all kinds of kind of easy listening rock that was that in a way James Taylor kind of became caught up in, and in the chronology of things, and he kind of embodied something in that as well. So and then another group we didn't mention, they didn't have a hit single, but at the very end of the year you had Black Sabbath's first album, which again augured a whole other style of music, and again a whole new generation of young rock fans for whom the Beatles were ancient history, and they wanted their own music. And so we had Black Sabbath, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, you know, Led Zeppelin III usurped the Beatles in this major British reader poll that year. For the, you know, Beatles had been the number one most popular group for years, and suddenly they're bounced out of that by Zeppelin. Very telling of the changes that were coming in rock and roll.